Welcome, you're listening to the Kraz Files podcast with Adam and Garth. It's Thursday the 6th of August 2015. You can get this podcast from Podomatic.com and also iTunes, but please go to our website, KrazFiles.com, and check that out. Lots of podcasts up there. Tons of stories each week. Thanks for listening. Okay, we're now ready to go. Okay. Garth, we are plugged in. Alison is joining us all the way from Connecticut. Thanks for joining us, Alison, today. It's good to have you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You've come on today to fill us in on your family's story and in regards to vaccines and vaccine damage. So I'll let you do that. Okay. You know, it's a shocking issue, and I wish it was not happening, but it's happening all around, you know. And as I told you before, we're dealing with it here, just trying to help as best we can. And I don't need to tell you about all these draconian-type laws, these forced vaccination laws they're bringing in. And we scream it all the time. It's your right, it's my right as a human being. If you have children, to do what you think's best for them and have your say, not be forced. And we're seeing that in Australia now and also New Zealand, where you need to get vaccinated for your job. You know, and that's going to go into everything. You know, it's going to go into getting a car license, travel overseas, all sorts of stuff where you'll have to be vaccinated. So the laws are coming in so swift and they're being changed so quickly. Especially what they did here, where there was no public input. And I speak to a lot of families who are worried because they've lost all their government benefits and a lot of things, and it's getting more restrictive around them. And I see, because I work with kids, I see quite a bit of damage and sick children all the time. And so, as I said, we just try and connect with anyone we can to, and you have a direct story here. With this, and we hope to have Dr. Rima plug in a little bit later as well, if she can make it. But let's get into it, Alison. Why don't you just, you got the floor, take your time, tell us about yourself and your family, and let us know what happened there.
Okay. Well, actually, the first major event, which is what most people would be concerned with, and I think was the one thing that convinced me that essentially something ought to be done. I had already had three children. When I had my fourth child and I took him in for his 8-week well baby checkup, was the standard time at the time in 1985, because other vaccines have been added since then. But in 1985, the traditional form was that at 8 weeks of age, the first set of immunizations would be given, and that was diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus in one shot. And so that immunization was given to my son at 8 weeks of old, and within 2 hours, he was running a fever. within 3 hours. He was essentially unconsolable, crying, screaming, wouldn't eat, wouldn't drink, you know, wouldn't do anything. Fever continued to elevate, even though he had Tylenol on board, which is what they always advise everybody, you know, go home, give the child Tylenol. It's allegedly not unusual for them to run a low-grade fever or to have a red area or a sore spot where the injection was given. And that's pretty much all most parents are ever told or informed. But his decline continued over the course of the evening into encephalic screaming, which is really a high-pitched, continuous wail that occurred throughout the night with him, with the temperature going above 105 degrees, calling the doctor intermittently throughout the night. And then by 5 o'clock in the morning, he had pretty much gone into collapse. He was lethargic, barely arousable, had deep, heavy breathing. And when I called the physician again, of course, they were extremely perturbed by my being a neurotic mother and calling them with everything. And they said, well, if you don't want to wait until the doctor's office opens, just take him to the hospital. So at 6 o'clock in the morning, I took him to the local emergency department of the local hospital. And within 20 minutes of being there, he went into cardiac arrest. They were able to resuscitate him. They did not know why he had gone into cardiac arrest. They did not know why he had the fever. They did not know why he had the symptomology that he did leading up to my presentation at the emergency room. They put him on oxygen. They put him on observation. They did a lumbar puncture, spinal tap, to check his spinal fluid and see if he had inadvertently or coincidentally, which is the key word, developed a meningitis. And I was pretty much left to watch my son over the next course of hours without getting any answers from anybody as to exactly what was going on, what was wrong with him, why did this happen, et cetera, et cetera. And then fortunately, my husband is very excitable at times. And when he got to the hospital from work, he essentially took the nurse's station apart, gave the hospital 5 minutes to get a physician's you-know-what into the hospital room. Otherwise, he was putting me and the baby in the car, and we were going to go to a large medical center. They ended up coming back in within about 5 minutes. They made a call to one of the large medical centers that are nationally, internationally known, which is Yale New Haven Hospital. They diagnosed him over the phone as a new onset of juvenile diabetes or type 1 diabetes, and that he was in collapse. They gave instructions to the hospital staff as to things to do, you know, certain medications, certain supportive therapy, different IV fluid, different medications to give him, and that they were en route to pick him up themselves. They arrived about 45 minutes later. They bundled him up. They told me not to expect him to survive the 45-minute trip back down to Yale New Haven Hospital. And when we got there, surprisingly, he had still survived. We did very experimental procedures with him because there was no established protocol to be able to treat successfully for survival. Any child under the age of 12 months that had a new onset of juvenile diabetes. But we did whatever. I gave them permission to do whatever. And, you know, thank goodness with every top pediatric department in the hospital coming in the middle of the night to work on him, work with him, to monitor him, and to keep us apprised and keep us at the bedside, et cetera. By the time we got to the following day at noontime, they felt that he had turned a corner and they had established a new protocol for treating onset of juvenile diabetes. They had said they had never seen the onset anywhere documented in the world at that young of an age. And that was their primary concern, was basically saving his life at the time. Unfortunately, what they did do, even though it did save his life, is that it had caused encephalitis, which is a brain swelling. So he was eventually left with developmental disabilities from that protocol. So his interaction and the events of that day and what followed have actually led to a lot of advances in care for diabetes, and led to his care, treatment, protocol, follow-up, having been part of published papers in multiple medical journals and documents, and helped to establish a protocol. But even though that was what it was and that was the immediate thing to deal with at the time, I continue to ask, why did this happen? Everybody in 1985 believed that diabetes was the onset of an autoimmune disease process, and only an autoimmune disease process, and could not be caused by any other reason other than pancreatic cancer, or, you know, say suffering some trauma and having your pancreas removed. At 8 weeks of age, there's very limited environmental exposure. We know that there's a genetic component, but they did not ever find, when I insisted on follow-up trials, investigational studies, I went into every investigational program that was on the eastern seaboard of the United States at the time. We traveled between Virginia, Duke University, Maryland Medical Center, hospitals in New York, Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston. If there was a study, we participated in it. And of all the testing that they did, he never showed that he had ever developed the islet cell antibodies, which are what would identify the autoimmune process for the onset of juvenile diabetes. With that in hand and knowing that information, I went for genetic testing. We went for genetic counseling. There was a genetic susceptibility for diabetes, as well as some other co-occurring genetic triggers that was familial, that was inherited, but with limited environmental exposure. By the time you're 8 weeks of age, it was, so what really was the cause? And I wasn't about to let it drop. I said, there's no way that you can give someone an immunization on one day and become a juvenile diabetic within 24 hours when the doctor had just given him a well baby exam and found nothing wrong with him. There's no way that that happens. So I continued to press forward. I was fortunate that I was a biochemistry major in college for my degree. And then eventually I had switched over for nursing. And there was nothing in anything that I had ever learned that was going to allow them to minimize the impact and tell me that there was not a causation effect by the immunization that he received. So I started doing research on my own. I demanded that the studies, the blood work, his medical records be sent to the National Institute of Health for evaluation of implication of the vaccine that he had received. I did my own research. I picked up the book that had just recently been published, which was called DPT, A Shot in the Dark, with the primary author being Barbara Lowe Fisher. I spoke to her. She was located in Virginia. We spoke multiple times on the phone. She had done research due to vaccine injury that her child had suffered years before. And some of the research that they had unearthed and been able to put in the book was some of the longitudinal studies that had been tracked through public health information in Germany, where they were calling it, the onset of juvenile diabetes was called spring syndrome. And that most children would get whooping cough would usually get at the end of winter, early spring. And after they recovered from whooping cough, because despite what public health propaganda has become, whooping cough is not fatal. Although it can be, it's rare, just like anything else that you could possibly get. There's always a potential that there could be a cascade of events that causes a multi-system failure there's usually other co-occurring illnesses that people are dealing with that make them more susceptible to that. But to get back to the point, after children had whooping cough and recovered from it, anywhere from 6 weeks to 12 weeks later, they would start to see in the villages where there had been whooping cough documented, that there were also a large onset of juvenile diabetes occurring 6 to 12 weeks after a child had whooping cough. And therefore the pertussis became the highest suspect in the onset of the juvenile diabetes in my son. And at the time in 1985, the pertussis vaccine that was given was not the attenuated virus. It was a whole virus. And what had been documented previously was that there would be essentially a misidentification, that the virus and the body itself would not only react to the virus that would given, but the virus would attach to islet cells, and or the body would misidentify the islet cells, which are the insulin producing cells in your pancreas, and in the attempt to destroy the virus would also the islet cells would become destroyed. It took about 5 years. So when my son was about 5 years old, I finally got the answer from the National Institute of Health that they said, we cannot say that he would have never developed diabetes in his lifetime. He might have developed type 2 diabetes or adult onset when he was 50, but they certainly were able to identify that the onset of the juvenile diabetes in him at 8 weeks of age was caused by the pertussis vaccine. At that point in time, and ever since that incident happened, none of my other children ever got any more immunizations. They never got any booster shots. They never got anything. Because nothing else was going to be allowed to happen to any of my other children until I got a specific answer. And so once that came through Yale New Haven Hospital, they wrote essentially a permanent medical exclusion for all of my children to never get any more pertussis vaccine, because evidently there was a familial genetic component, and because of the whole cell vaccine, that they would be excused and have a permanent medical contraindication that they did not need to get. And they started to come to me and say, he's going to school, he should really get the measles, mumps, and rubella. And measles, mumps, and rubella is nothing like diarrhea, pertussis, and tetanus. My answer to them was, that's nice, it's not your child, I have enough medical background. At this point, I went in to finish my nursing degree. I had done extensive research on my own in the meantime. And I said, giving him anything until you test him first to see whether or not he has an allergy or an adverse reaction, because if he does with the test dose, then he's not getting the full vaccine. I'm not taking the statement at the Yale Allergy and Immunology Clinic. They basically thought that they were humoring a neurotic mother, that they were wasting their time. They gave a 1-1 subdermal in his left forearm. They gave the negative standard, which is just normal saline, in the opposite forearm. Within 5 minutes, that extended from above his elbow down to his wrist, and his entire left arm was red to the point of being purple from his shoulder all the way down to his finger. Because Yale is also a teaching hospital. We had tons of, you know, physicians and pediatricians in the room. They said that they never see this, that this never happens, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I turned to them, do you ever test anybody? And they don't. They don't test. They don't test to see whether or not someone has an allergy, and they don't test to see whether or not someone could have an adverse reaction, whether it's to So okay, where Allison, do you need me to pick back up?
I think you were, you were just breaking up there, so we reestablished. We got Dr. Reamer on the line as well. You started breaking up when you were talking about your son getting an injection or something, and his arm turning blue and that. So go on from around that area.
So that was the test dose for measles, mumps, and rubella.
Yeah.
And he had a violent reaction to it. They obviously, established antihistamines and steroids and immediate care so that he wouldn't go into anaphylactic reaction. But one of their things, comments during the course of it was that this does not happen and that they never see this. It's never been documented in any medical journals that this would happen. My question to them was, well, how often do you ever test before any dose is given? And they said, we usually don't. So that, I think, was another large problem to me, was the fact that there are a lot of things that are not just the viruses themselves that are imparted. And even though he had a reaction to a test dose, they never were concerned enough to try to go forward to determine whether that allergic reaction was actually caused by any of the viruses being inducted, or whether it was the medium which the viruses were cultured in, or whether it was actually an additive that was a part of the vaccine that was being to be given. There's no way of really knowing when children have adverse reactions for you to really know what part or why they're having the reaction, and medical establishment has not shown an overwhelming interest in that. We did in the United States develop the Childhood Vaccination Protection Act in order to relieve liability of the vaccine manufacturers who were starting to be frequently sued for multi-million dollar lawsuits when they threatened to cease producing for the United States. They requested the federal government give them a buy on liability. And so that's how the Childhood Vaccination Protection Act went into effect. That's how the Childhood Vaccination Protection Fund was developed for people that have themselves or family members experience an adverse reaction or allergic reaction based on the degree of severity, that they can get up to $250,000 through that federal government program. And they also developed the vaccine adverse event reporting system, which is supposed to be reported by physician or hospital, although a parent or guardian can make the call as well, into the system that's supposed to give adequate tracking on what the adverse reactions are and that there are adverse reactions. However, we just recently, my oldest son, who is not the subject of these testings and et cetera, my oldest son has two children. His oldest son just got a second diphtheria tetanus, because none of my grandchildren get the pertussis either, and they're on a delayed vaccine schedule. He just got, at the age of 6, a second dose of diphtheria tetanus. And even though he did not have a reaction to the first dose, when he got the second dose, he had a severe adverse reaction of a temperature above 105, neurological headache, photophobia, which is sensitivity to light, and intolerance to light, and his entire arm was red. It wasn't a knot from an injection and muscular tissue damage. His entire arm was red. He had hives throughout not only his arm, but going across his torso. And when we called the physicians and we reported it and we gave supportive care, etc., a follow-up discussion with the physician, who is actually a physician at Yale New Haven Allergy and Immunology for Pediatrics Center, his response was, that's not an adverse reaction. That's the reaction that we want them to have. And to which I had to throw the actual insert and approval by the Food and Drug Administration that actually outlines what an adverse reaction is and whether it's mild, moderate, severe, or an allergic reaction. I had to actually give him the guidelines to tell him that if he hadn't reported it to the vaccine reporting center, that I had already done so. It's ongoing. They frequently choose to ignore that there is a genetic component. I've recently done follow-up testing through the family as technology advances, because this journey for me began 30 years ago. And recently have followed up with my younger daughter and one of her younger daughters to actually now have been able to find that there's a familial component, which is that they actually have specific antigen deficiency, which is a really long and complicated topic to get into. But it actually makes them more sensitive to any immunization that they would get. So the standard recommendation, which has increased over the years, where you don't just get one immunization and you're good for 20 years or you're good for life, but they want more and more frequent boosters, we have insisted on titers being drawn when they've gotten delayed vaccines, and only certain vaccines, and not more than two vaccines, you know, two components at any one time. Things have been very limited. They've been very isolated. But with one dose, and I can tell you this for certain now, and I'm sure that the doctor can go into the immunological factors that determine public health policy, because not everyone is, and there's no contention that any vaccine gives you 100% immunity anyway. The goal would be in the 90 to 97% range for immunity after vaccination. But not all the population will be able to achieve that with only one dose. So therefore, even the people who can achieve that with one dose, if they were to get it, are still subjected to multiple subsequent vaccinations by state and federal law without testing and without information and without looking to see whether or not what the response is to what they are given, if it's given. But we have continuously pursued the familial history, the genetic history, the immunological factors that go into immunity, and a family's genetic predisposition towards having hypersensitivity and adverse reactions and allergies to components of the vaccines and the vaccines themselves.
That's right. Yeah, everybody's different. We just don't know how the children are going to react, do we? You know?
No.
And that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. That's very incredible, Alison, and beautifully put and said. You know, it's amazing that you've come out and told us this this incredible story. And obviously, Dr. Rima, it's going to be very important to get your input on something like this, because, Alison, I actually saved a whole bunch of information on all of this, and I saved a great article here talking about, this one was from VacTruth, and it's saying as early as 1933, T. Madron reported that two babies died within minutes of receiving the DPT vaccine. And that, talking about all these published studies in pediatrics, in 1981 revealed that children were experiencing brain damage as a result of the TPT vaccine. So it goes on and on. Research done by the Institute of Medicine in the 90s confirmed the same thing. Vaccines were responsible for brain damage. The pertussis toxin, aluminum mercury, and endotoxin contain the TPT vaccine. This is well documented. Scientific studies have done it and concluded that this could cause permanent brain damage. So it's all there for people to see, and as I just said, you don't know how kids are going to react when this venom goes into their arms. Dr. Rimmer, I'll bring you in now and get your thoughts on what Alison has told us, her story.
Oh, my thoughts are, first of all, to want to put my arms around her and tell her what a brave and determined woman she is, and what a great mother and grandmother she is.
Yeah.
And a mother perhaps to more than just her own biological and familial offspring by telling her story. So thank you. That's my first comment. As a doctor, as a mother, as a human being, thank you. Next thoughts, you're very welcome. Because what you're doing is not only incredibly difficult to live through, but you're also taking on the responsibility of sharing it publicly, and that's not easy. So I really think what you're doing is wonderful. I have some very, very specific thoughts and then more general thoughts that I'd like to share for those people who are listening to me for the first time, although I've been on the Kraz Files a number of times, and I have my own radio show, the Dr. Rima Truth Reports, on radio and TV, actually, and I've been on many, many talk shows. Somehow, you may not know that I am the medical director of the Natural Solutions Foundation. We're a health freedom organization. We believe that each of us owns our own bodies, and no one, neither state nor corporate entity nor anyone else, can make health decisions for us, and that includes vaccine mandates as well as any other health mandate. I am a physician. I have practiced drug-free medicine and psychiatry for better than 45 years, and I mean completely drug-free, because there's always a better way. I have come to the conclusion that there is no excuse for a vaccine if we're talking about health. None, ever. If you want to avoid infection and support your immune system, use NanoSilver 10 parts per million. If you want to avoid disease, the only thing that has ever eliminated an infectious disease in a population or reduced it substantially to the point of virtual elimination is a combination of hygiene, sanitation, better diet, and general health activities like clean water. And I have a paper that's available for you to read, download, share at tinyurl.com/ Dr. Rima India paper, which documents this, I think, irrefutably. So that's who this voice is that's going to make a comment or two or three. I was listening to the story of your son being diagnosed with sort of mystery onset type 1 diabetes. And I was immediately put in mind of the brilliant and seminal work of Dr. Michael Innes, who practiced in India, British India, and now resides in Australia, a brilliant physician and hematologist who noticed that the antibodies following vaccination in infants who died, caught death, sudden infant death, the antibodies to the pancreas were very, very high. And what that meant was that the vaccine, and this can be many vaccines, it's not specific to DPT or MMR, it's any vaccine that stimulates an autoimmune response, an attack on the tissues of the body. Typically, among the tissues that are attacked, and the encephalitis is part of the neurological attack, but among the tissues that are attacked is the pancreas. And these children develop an acute lack of insulin. Now, we all know that insulin accompanies sugar or shepherds sugar into the cells, glucose, into the cells of the body, and that glucose is the primary fuel for metabolism for cells. But many people do not know that vitamin C is also shepherded into the cells by the insulin molecule. And so in addition to becoming hypoglycemic inside the cells, the cells are also low, cataclysmically low in vitamin C, accounting for the findings in so-called shaken baby, which is really post-vaccine death. And similarly, your son developed what sounds very much like an autoimmune post-vaccine pancreas attack on the islets of Langerhans. And he was lucky enough to be saved by high-level technology medical care after having been assaulted by high-level medical care. And I would make the statement that all vaccines are a pseudoscience founded in pus and deceit. And this is borne out in modern times, Allison, by the fact that when your son was being tested for whether he'd have an immediate allergic reaction to the MMR, and they said, wow, we never see this. You very cleverly said, do you look? Do you test? Mm-hmm. And they said, well, actually, no, we don't. Well, surprising that you don't see it, right? Because you never test. Vaccines are a cause of and a source of intellectual blindness on the part of the medical and public health community, partly because of the dollar signs involved and partly because those dollars have bought some of the most magnificently conceived and executed propaganda on the planet in the history of humankind. Extraordinary propaganda, because vaccine science and virtually the entire, quote, science of vaccine-related immunology is smoke, mirrors, and pseudoscience. Now, that's a very, very strong set of statements. I was actually, Allison, I was shocked to hear that anybody in your family had received any further vaccines, although you've attempted to be very cautious. I would add another perspective, which is that there is no real excuse for vaccination. There is only pseudoscience excuse for vaccination, and that no one should ever be vaccinated against anything because there is always a better way. And in terms of immune support, that better way is nanosilver, 10 parts per million, because it has never been shown to not be effective in supporting the immune system against any of the hundreds of pathogens, including parasitic pathogens like malaria, that it's been tested in the presence of. It's quite extraordinary. I know of over 1,000 scientific documented studies, published peer-reviewed studies showing exactly that. And I will be happy to talk about that at length if people want. But in terms of vaccination mandates, not only are the things that we are immediately allergic to or maybe immediately allergic to present, but every vaccine damages the mitochondria of everyone that it's injected or inhaled into. Everyone, and the vaccinated shed viruses and endanger everybody by doing so, because the viruses mutate in the presence of aluminum, mercury residues, or actual mercury concentrations of significance, and the other processes by being passed through the human body from one person to another. They mutate and they become far, far more deadly. We change the nature of the disease, as with whooping cough. In South Korea, 99.5% of the population has been vaccinated since 1984. In that time, whooping cough deaths have risen by 13,000%. We are creating disease and biological mayhem by vaccination, as the unfortunate reality of your son and your grandson, the six-year-old grandson, makes very clear. But most of the results are long-term and may be subtle. vaccinated children are less healthy than unvaccinated children, as we know from five separate studies which have been carried out in the United States and in Europe. Five separate studies indicate that vaccinated children are more at risk for asthma, for autoimmune disease, for neurological dysfunction, including but not limited to autism, and to death from all causes than unvaccinated children. What are we doing?
That
what?
Shedding, Dr. Rima, you mentioned, talk about that a little bit, because I'm actually seeing it quite a lot. even with six-month-old babies to a year-old, for example, after receiving those vaccines, the complexion, the watery eyes, the snot just pouring out of the nose, that's obviously part of the shedding. But as we know through the mainstream media, particularly in Australia, they're absolutely demonizing unvaccinated kids, telling everybody, spooking the whole population, that an unvaccinated child is a threat to the Australian population. This is where it's getting so dangerous, and in America as well, because if your children aren't vaccinated, are deemed to be a threat to society, they could be taken and you may be arrested. But this shedding you talk about, Dr. Rima, you know, is this part of it? Explain that a little bit about the different immune reactions that different children are going to have and how that may display outwardly. But also that shedding, is that a way that they shed after they've been highly vaccinated, through their pores of their skin? Does it just pour out through the snot and all this sort of stuff? Do they heat up a lot? They seem to be heating up so much.
When you say they seem to be heating up, what do you mean, Adam?
The kids, like, they seem to, as you said, they seem to have, sort of mild kind of ongoing infections all year, but also when they get sick, they vomit and they heat up a lot. They get high temperatures. Not so much, because I know when you've got an infection, your body heats up to burn it off. But I just sort of mean that they constantly seem to be carrying infections all year. But it's hard to tell because the parents seem to be so used to it now, and they consider that to be sort of normal behavior. But, you know, like I look at these kids and they just don't look well, and they've got all this stuff pouring out of them.
They're not well. Their immune systems have been damaged. And I'm sure that Allison has done vast amounts of research into what the immune system is and what it's supposed to do. The new normal is the old sick. The new normal is chronic disease. The new normal is more than 60% of 9-year-olds on chronic disease medication. That's the new normal. That's not the biological normal.
With the asthma and allergies as well, yeah.
I'm sorry?
With the asthma and allergies as well, particularly quite severe, and the anaphylactic, you know, to the food. They're allergic to everything. But I'm seeing bad asthma. Diabetes, yeah.
Diabetes in children was type 1 diabetes was virtually unheard of 25, 30, 35 years ago. And then as the vaccine schedule has risen, and by the way, we have to stop thinking that vaccination is just about our children. They are coming for the adults next. And I have been saying this 15 years. After they get the childhood mandates, you're next. And indeed, in California, immediately after passing SB 277, which eliminates virtually all childhood vaccine mandates that the parents might choose to protect their children with, the very next thing was another law from the deceitful and despicable Senator Dr. Richard Pan, which says that child care workers must be fully vaccinated, and to not be fully vaccinated is a criminal act. And I guarantee you that it will spread to bus drivers. Well, as a matter of fact, today in the United States, the CDC ACIP Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices recommended that everyone over 65 receive a DPT shot, because they might be grandparents, they might be neighbors of children They might be, they might be, they might be. And so they have to have another DPT shot in spite of the fact that the National Institutes of Health has said that the DPT shot for adults over 65 is particularly dangerous. Now about shedding. Viruses are neither live nor dead. Viruses are attenuated or they are fully capable of infection. An attenuated virus, which people think of as a killed virus, is still a virus. And the protein is still capable of eliciting an antibody reaction, which is why it's introduced. But allegedly, it's not capable of entering the cell of the body, replicating and producing disease. However, they are still biological organisms, and they are still capable of bringing about both antigenic responses, that is to say, the immune system responding to them, and if they are not fully attenuated, they're capable indeed of infecting or injecting their own genetic material into cells and capturing the reproductive capacity, the DNA, and replicating until the cell bursts and creating an infection. Well, anyone, not just children, anyone who is injected or instilled with, because some of these things are inhaled rather than injected, anyone who is instilled with these viruses is capable of releasing them in all of their body fluids and in their breath. And so they are shed out into the air. And look at the package inserts. They say that shedding can occur anywhere up to 21 days or beyond. Now, the beyond is very interesting. There are some people who never stop shedding. So they become typhoid Marys if the disease is infective, or modified typhoid Marys if the virus is in fact merely antigenic and can just provoke autoimmune and other immune dysfunctions, so that you never know whether the person sitting next to you or the child having a play date with your child or whatever, the vaccinated person, is in fact an infective person, even though they are disease-free. Now, Paul King, PhD, the brilliant, brilliant scholar on these issues, says that we have not eliminated diseases like measles and pertussis and mumps and rubella and so on. We haven't eliminated them at all. What we've done is driven the symptoms underground so that the child or the adult is chronically ill. And that's what you were pointing to, Adam. These kids are always sick. They always have runny noses. They always have glazed, unwell-looking eyes. They always have pale complexions or overly ruddy complexions. They're always weak and fragile. Their mitochondria are damaged. Their immune status is damaged. Their metabolism is damaged because of the damage to all of the endocrine glands and to the brain. Their behavior is damaged. And there are 271 more vaccines in the pipeline, according to the CDC, which are in late stage approval process. And how many of them do you think will not be put on the schedule? They will all be put on the schedule until they wipe us all out.
You said it. Allison,
jump in to like add to some of the things that the doctor said, because recently in the United States, Big Pharma has started an ad campaign essentially showing grandma holding the baby grandchild that's an infant and having her turn to face you, that essentially grandma is the wolf in sheep's clothing who's going to kill her grandchild because she needs to go get a booster shot for diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus.
Yeah. We're
getting the same here. It's never been, I mean, being a nurse for over the past 25 years in active practice, but taking that with a grain of salt, based on my research, based on my, you know, biochemistry background, research into allergy, immunology, et cetera, I've seen it. I'm not buying it. And it's just another way for them to make money. It's been the suspicion of a lot of healthcare workers that are on the front line that aren't in a position, like a lot of pediatricians, physicians, et cetera. They go with what the recommendations are. They go with the standard and they don't know why. They don't know if it's right. They don't know if it's wrong. And they don't care to investigate on their own to see whether or not anybody that anybody has an objection to anything would be well-founded or not in their child. Everything is automatically poo-pooed. But it's been pharmacy pushing the agenda of the pharmacy industry, pushing the agenda of the National Institute of Health and of the CDC. It's a very conflicted relationship, especially in the United States. You have salesmen going to physicians' offices that are giving great incentives in order for them to push their drug, to recommend their drug, to put things forward for their drugs. But the pharmaceutical conglomerate, and I live in an area where the worldwide station, foundation, and start of Pfizer's is and has been. I attended college right down the street from Pfizer's. I actually went and interned at Pfizer's in their antibiotic research department that used to be a huge department at Pfizer's based in Groton, Connecticut, which now Pfizer's has essentially closed down their continued research in antibiotics. And whether the doctor agrees with it or not, this is more of mainstream. This is their business. They shut it down because it's not lucrative. Why is it not lucrative? Because somebody's going to be on antibiotics for 5 days or 10 days or whatever it is, but it's a limited time, and they're not going to get sick enough in order for the companies to make money. So they don't research anymore. They don't look into the organisms that are mutating that are no longer going to be responsive to the standard antibiotics that we already have on the market. There's been a lot of flack out there about multi-drug resistant tuberculosis, all these other different strains, and they can't identify the different strains of whooping cough that are now being found in the general populations, which is not the strain of whooping cough even necessarily that you're being vaccinated against, but nobody's being told that there's more than one strain of anything. So this has really been the large pharmaceutical company's push towards everything. But what Pfizer's is focusing on, what a lot of big pharma is focusing on, is what can we do? What new medicine can we get? And what can we create that people are going to continue to take for the rest of their life or get told that they have to take for the rest of their life? And one of those instances has been recommendations for diabetics to say that as of the age of 18, that in order to be proactive as a diabetic, that the medical establishment should be insisting that they start an ACE inhibitor and that they start a statin drug, because allegedly it's been proven that that would reduce their risk of coronary artery disease, of stroke, of heart attack, of elevated cholesterol levels, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And when they tried to do that to my son, because he's 30 now, and they started this push when he was 18, I said, so you give him a statin drug, which has a huge potential for lifelong serious damage by taking the statin drug. If he takes it when he doesn't need it, what happens when it doesn't work? What happens when he needs something else and there's nothing else to go to? Let's just do that, because the mainstream medical establishment will not listen to Dr. Rima, who's on today. She's considered radical. She's considered far left wing. She's considered she would be considered a conspiracy theorist. She would be a naturopath that is talking mumbo jumbo the same way that Chinese and Eastern medicine is considered.
Allison, excuse me. I'm a physician, an MD, who's talking mumbo jumbo. Go ahead.
I understand
lunatic,
that. But
Dr. Rima.
You know, I don't have to tell you how the regular everyday medical establishment would listen to what you say and say poo-poo and turn their back because they're not interested. They're just not interested. And that's why a lot of these things go in the way that they are, because the general population is not informed. But people that work at the bedside, and I've worked at the bedside, I've been in community hospitals and larger hospitals as a nurse, critical care areas, worked with pediatrics. I've seen what's been happening over the years. I know that other nurses that I work with are, we always knew, all right, don't get the flu shot, because if you go get the flu shot, you're going to get sick. But they've been recommending it for healthcare workers for years. It's now evolved again into a mandate. So in the state of Rhode Island, a year ago, the state legislature in Rhode Island decided to mandate that all healthcare workers are mandated to get an annual flu shot, and that if they don't get the flu shot, they no longer have a license to practice.
Yeah.
Now that's being fought in the courts. I'm proud to be a part of a union that is actually fighting that and taking it to court as a violation of human rights, a violation of civil rights, and a violation of the U.S. Constitution. That fight is not over, but that's being discussed in every state house and in the federal Congress constantly, because the goal is not just, as the doctor said, the goal is not for pediatric coverage. This is not to protect our children. This is to make money for the pharmaceutical companies who are duping public health officials, and they're going along with it. It's not the kids. It's first they're coming for the kids, and now they're going to come for you. And I know when I started nursing school, they had told me, and that was almost 30 years ago, they told me that I couldn't enter nursing school without going to get a booster shot for measles, mumps, and rubella. Mm. And I had to prove that I had had chicken pox just in order to go to nursing school. And I said, I'm not getting the shot. I'm not getting it. You can draw titers. Well, I was of the generation, I was born in 1960. So when I was about 10 or 11 in the United States, they had mass inoculation, right? Everybody that was a school kid in elementary school, because I still remember, we got put on a school bus, we got trucked to another city, we stood in a line like we were in the military, and we went down the line and we got shots in both arms. It was just like going overseas in the military. And who the hell knew what we got, and who the hell cared if we were going to have a reaction to it? It was what it was. That was the only time that I ever got measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. I never got a booster. It wasn't mandated back then. My first one was my last one. I was already like 11 years old. Well, when I went to nursing school, and you know, I was in my 20s, and they told me I needed to get a booster shot. It didn't matter when you had it, how long ago you had it, you had to go get it. And I had titers drawn. I showed that I had 97% immunity to measles, mumps, and rubella from that one injection when I was 11 years old. And luckily, at the time, and still to this day, the state of Connecticut does accept a titer as proof of immunization so that I didn't have to go forward. But I'm doing the same thing for my grandchildren. And when you had mentioned that you were like surprised that any of the my children or my grandchildren ever went forward with any vaccinations, is the situation is this, and this is the position that a lot of people are put in with their children, and they haven't realized what to do about it for them, let alone what they're going to do when it becomes mandated for adults. But in the state of Connecticut, we do not have a personal objection right. We only have two abilities to get exemptions from vaccines in the state of Connecticut. One is a medical exclusion that has to be written by a physician, and it's harder than hell to get it. And the second one is a religious exemption, which the state legislature in the state of Connecticut this past session, just recently, that became effective July 1st, is that they now put a restriction on religious exclusion so that when you submit religious exclusion for an objection to vaccinations in the state of Connecticut, you have to go and you have to get it notarized and you have to prove that you're actually practicing a religion. That's the only way that you get exclusions. And that's so the only
Actually, one of our very active programs right now in the Natural Solutions Foundation, and I would urge you all to go to the following website, put your email in, and then you'll be able to download a 16-hour marathon Vaccine Truth ebook, which has videos and references and has an international faculty of extraordinarily high level. And you'll be able to get information that's very hard to get. Adam Crabb of the Kraz Files was one of our presenters. Please go to tinyurl.com/Mayday Marathon. tinyurl.com/Mayday Marathon. And then if you live in the United States, please write this one down and go there and share this one very, very actively. It's an action item where you can flood the email boxes of legislators at the state and the federal level saying, no, I do not accept a vaccine mandate. And that link, and it's very important that you do this because our pushback, in fact, does work. That link is tinyurl.com/vaccination-is-violation. tinyurl.com/vaccination-is-violation. And if you go either to tinyurl.com/Mayday Marathon or tinyurl.com/vaccination-is-violation and take the actions there or enter your email, we will send you a complimentary subscription to our newsletter, which has a tremendous amount of information that you absolutely need, not just on vaccines, but on all of the issues on which our freedom is being threatened. And I'd like to take one more second to talk about the basic issue here. The basic issue is informed consent. And whether you know it or not, wherever you're listening to me, whether it's in the United States or Australia or New Zealand or Canada or on a relay in the moon, informed consent is protected by international law and through a series of events, which we've talked about often on our radio show and in videos. The United States, by carrying out the Nuremberg subsequent trials in which they tried and hanged Nazi doctors, inadvertently bound itself to the Nuremberg code and to the Geneva Convention code, which says that it is a crime against humanity to force people to accept any medical intervention or vaccination. And therefore, when your workers, your co-workers, or your children are being threatened with the removal of support or with the loss of a job or the lack of access to school or whatever, and they are being vaccinated under duress, your duress if you're the parent, or you if you are the adult being subjected to duress, that is a violation of both international and national law and represents not only a criminal act, but a crime against humanity, which is a kind of international crime. And we are taking that forward very seriously at the Natural Solutions Foundation. And, oh, by the way, we have a Facebook page called Natural Solutions Foundation. You need to like it. You need to go there. You need to share what is there with everybody you can reach, because one or two of us are impotent. Millions of us control public policy. We've seen that over and over again. Allison is telling you that her children and her grandchildren are being threatened. Well, so are you, and so are your grandchildren and your children and your neighbors. And it is necessary for all of us to say firmly and directly, no. And then to make that no real by having so many of us oppose it that the government has no choice but to back down. We did that with the mandatory flu shot in 2009 when 3.5 million emails arrived in 11 days, and the United States government, which had already funded and provided the supplies for a universal mandated swine flu vaccination program with enough squalene in it to produce infertility and sterility in the entire population, because behind the money, folks, is depopulation. After they had already announced it to Congress, we, through 3.5 million emails in 11 days, forced the United States government to say, oh, maybe we won't do that. Guess it's not a good idea. And we stopped them. We stopped them. We together. That's what it takes. It takes people like Allison and people like Adam and people like Garth and people like me, but most importantly, people like you saying, no, don't you dare.
You got that right, Dreamer?
Definitely.
I have to bring out the Clear Harvey article, Garth, again. I just can't help myself to show Allison, because Allison was talking about this media spin propaganda, this hateful demonization of children and families and fear-mongering, Allison, in the United States, because we're getting that here. And sometimes I'm sitting there watching these TV ads and they're so creepy that I just can't believe what's going on. But this actually came out of the Rupert Murdoch newspapers, Allison, the Daily Telegraph, the Sunday Telegraph. It's probably one of the biggest newspapers in the country on March the 22nd this year. And the heading was "Anti-vaxxers, you are baby killers." Dr. Rima got involved with this, and we went on there. And it basically says, would you kill babies? Would you put him through horrific pain? Would you take away their oxygen? Would you let babies suffocate to death? Well, if you haven't vaccinated your children, then that's what you are doing. So this disgusting article has no scientific merit or anything to back itself up. It just goes through and then continues to call parents who don't vaccinate terrorists. I'm not kidding. Terrorists and baby killers and all this vile stuff. And this is from our mainstream media, Allison, which you're getting as well. I mean, I'll send this article through to Gio so you can read it later. But it really is astounding. And to be called, to call parents who don't or choose not to vaccinate a terrorist, I mean, this is beyond belief. And, you know, killers and all this sort of stuff.
And then when the baby dies...
Yeah, exactly.
From shaken baby syndrome, which is vaccine injury. And by the way, we have a webinar with some very, very, very important, strong science about the fact that shaken baby syndrome is indeed vaccine injury. It's called the Shaken Baby Hoax. And I urge you to look online for Shaken Baby Hoax and access that webinar. It's a 3.5-hour webinar and very heavily researched book with a handbook for parents, prosecutors, and police on this issue as part of the webinar. Then there's the issue of those children who wind up being high-functioning autists. They are the Delta workers of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, and they are intentionally, we believe, we have another webinar about that called Autism, an Inside Job. And we show there that the vaccine doses are being increased and tweaked in order to get what the globalists want, which is, and I am sorry to say it, and I sorrow that this is our world. But what it is the high-functioning autistic worker who does not have the skills to combine and form a union or a rebellion, the high-functioning autistic worker who loves routine and can be easily satisfied with simple pleasures, who is interchangeable, who is infertile, who is fully vaccinated, and who is fully docile. And we have in there a quote from a member of the British Parliament, Lord Larry Friend, speaking about these people as the ideal workers. And then we have the fact that Goldman Sachs, Vodafone, Microsoft, and all the other massive globalist corporations have announced that they are seeking to hire autistic workers preferentially. And how are these autistic workers being created? With vaccine doses, as we know. And oh, by the way, one final advantage to the autistic worker, they can be paid as disabled worker for pennies on the dollar compared to what, let's say, a college graduate technician would cost.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. I read that out before, Garth, in Australia. Thousands, Alison, of new students with autism are enrolled in our schools. In Queensland, in Western Australia, in New South Wales, teachers are struggling to care for the skyrocketing number of students with autism. While trying to run normal classes in Queensland, they've said through the education department, they've never seen anything like this coming into their communities with the autistic children. And all our supermarkets now, I noticed, they're all autists working on the cash registers for low wages in Kmart and all these places. So I'm seeing it all around me. And when Dr. Rima put that paper out and I started reading it, it just was like a hammer blow to the head. I thought, you know, is that true, Garth? Are they creating this autistic worker drone force? Exactly what Dr. Reba just explained. But it's a frightening scenario, you know?
It certainly is, yes. Oh, no, it's got about one in 50 or 60, isn't it, Dr. Reba? It used to be one in 10,000 in children.
Well, actually, when I graduated from medical school in 1970, it was anywhere between 1 and 4 in 10,000, depending on how many vaccines they've had, but we didn't really understand that at the time. And now we're looking in the Somali community in Minneapolis, for example. These immigrant parents have had their children fully vaccinated, and it's 1 in 36.
One in 36 now. That's frightening.
But The research, for instance, coming out of MIT is saying that within not very many years, one in two children will be on the autistic spectrum. And what's happening now, my discipline, my postgraduate discipline and residency training and fellowship after medical school was in psychiatry, including a specialty in child and adolescent psychiatry. And what I see now in child psychiatry and in psychology is that autism is being normalized. First, there was a push saying it's not a disability. It's just a divergent way of being normal. That's like saying being born with one leg or having one leg amputated shortly after birth is not a disability. It's just a divergent way of having two legs. It's nonsense. That doesn't mean that we can't support these people, that we shouldn't do everything we can to enable them. But it is a disability. Let's be clear about that. Furthermore, who would wish it on their child if they had a choice? So now autistic behavior is being normalized as normal, expectable behavior. And it is now normal to have children on psychiatric and psychoactive drugs. No, it's not, folks. It's abnormal. It's like saying it's normal for an elderly person to have senile dementia. No, it's not. It's common. It's normative. But it's not normal. It's abnormal, and it has to be prevented. If you look at paintings of the sky or representations of the sky on, let's say, mainstream television broadcasts, when they show a backdrop of the sky, they'll show chemtrails in it as if somehow that's normal. Sorry, not normal. Common, frequent, deadly, not normal. Same with autism, not normal.
Yeah.
Yes, it's frightening. And Alison mentioned earlier about the money these people are making. Well, there's an article came out. I think you might have sent it, Ad. It was August the 6th, 2015. And it's saying here that the CDC is budgeting $4 billion to purchase vaccines from drug companies, and they now want to increase it by another half a billion. So these people who are just corporations, it's frightening that it's even allowed to go on.
The real money is not in the vaccines. The real money is in the downstream profits from the lifelong drugs. As Allison mentioned, they want people on drugs that they will stay on for as long as they're alive. They want people on the diabetes drugs. They want people on the cardiovascular drugs. They want people on the behavioral drugs. And oh, by the way, in those 271 named vaccines are the behavioral vaccines that will short circuit your ability to have normal emotions, especially the emotions of protest and the emotions of anger and the emotions of rebellion.
There's hundreds of them.
Yes, that's exactly right. Allison, I would very much like to invite you to appear as my guest on the Dr. Rima Truth Reports, so that we can explore this.
I was going to say that, Doc. That would be a great idea. Yeah.
Absolutely. I hope you will do that, Allison. And if I can get your contact information from Adam or directly from you, I would love that.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, it would just be Skype, I guess, as well, Allison.
In the position to like fly around, but aside from that, but I think that the other part of the conversation, and we've, gone off on some of the, other things that do come up, does go farther into the fact that, a lot of what's gone on, as far as now considering certain things, autism spectrum disorders, and stating that it's a overdiagnosis, right? Now they're saying it's overdiagnosed. Kids are being diagnosed with autism that may not actually have it, as trying to find a way to back down. Because one of the side effects of those is that as long as autism is still considered a disability, and I can say in the state of Connecticut, it took a long time to get it recognized as a disability. But secondarily to that, that also started to give them certain rights and entitlements, which would put pressures on public budgets. And therefore, even though there are rights for supportive care services and programs, the public money and the public will is not there to financially support that. And so I think that's where you start to become the normalization, because the new goal is for anyone with any type of intellectual or developmental disability, or anyone on the autism spectrum disorder, to go into what they call meaningful employment. And so now they've set up all these meaningful employment programs, and they set up the federal government set up a program through the Center for Medicare and Medicaid, which is now called the Money Follows the Person program, because they want to take people out of institutions, and it's not that I disagree with that, but they want to take people from where they are. They want to keep them home. They want to get them into some sort of quote unquote meaningful employment, even though they don't want to change the law that allows you to treat anyone with a disability as a second class or segregated society that the Department of Labor laws and rules do not apply to. They are exempt from. Therefore, underpaying them without the ability to do otherwise. But the projection by the Department of Health and Human Services a number of years ago was that the overall population for autism, intellectual disabilities, and developmental disabilities was projected to have a 20% increase within a period of 15 years, which is going to exponentially increase the people with those diagnoses. And if at the same time we're pushing for quote unquote meaningful employment and inclusion, we're basically discussing the normalization of that. But people don't realize the programs, because speaking as a child, having a child with developmental disabilities as a result of what occurred, I'm in that system every day. And for their idea of meaningful employment, it's doing what someone else should do or could do that would get paid a much higher scale wage, and putting this person in as for manual labor and not having anyone else do manual labor, but have this person do manual labor, and instead of paying scale or having someone be able to speak up for themselves in any way, shape, or form, they get to pay 50% or less of what the average individual who went to get that job would be paid. And that's how the whole society benefits, because the corporations or the government gets to pay less money, and therefore they keep rolling that forward.
It's the Delta Force.
It's creating a coolie class by and go back to what Bertrand Russell said in 1922. Now, Bertrand Russell, who won a Nobel Prize, by the way, for his mathematics, he was a brilliant man. He was one of the Fabian socialists, along with Aldous Huxley and George Bernard Shaw and a whole bunch of other seminal thinkers of the late 19th and early 20th century. They were social policy makers, and they had a very, very clear view of what they thought the world should look like. When George Orwell wrote 1984, he was not writing a cautionary tale about what might happen if we didn't take steps to avoid it. He was a Fabian socialist. He was writing a story about how it should be. This was a hoped for outcome. Please remember that. And so what these people want is what Bertrand Russell articulated so well in 1922. He said, through injunction, injection, and indoctrination, it will become impossible for the ordinary man to have an independent thought. Now, you add to that what Aldous Huxley published, who, by the way, was one of the people who helped to create the entire MK Ultra mind control OSS and later CIA structure. So be afraid, be very afraid on that parameter. But what these people felt fully convinced was right was to have an underclass created chemically, which Aldous Huxley called the Delta workers and the Epsilon workers in Brave New World, created chemically by having their neurological and other functions altered early on, both in utero and then subsequently in early childhood. And that is what we have with the vaccines. This is no accident. This is no unfortunate, unforeseen happenstance. Nor am I a conspiracy theorist. I am a conspiracy factist. And these people, like the World Health Organization, like the United Nations, like the United States, have the audacity to put forward precisely what they want to see happen in writing. And we foolishly, collectively, ignore what they say they are working toward. This is all part of Agenda 21. This is all part of a controlled worker class compressed into urban environments and not given freedom to do anything that doesn't support the desires of the neo-aristocrats, the upper ruling class, as they style themselves. Let's not be foolish here. The tragedy that has befallen Allison's son and is befalling so many, many, many of our sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters is no accident. It's not that pediatricians can't figure it out for themselves. Pediatricians make a bundle by giving vaccinations. It's part of the glue that holds them into the system. In the main, pediatricians do not vaccinate themselves or their children. In the main, politicians do not vaccinate themselves or their children. In the main, the elite exempt themselves. And if you think this is conspiracy, check the data. Check the data. It is there.
Well, we have a prime minister. Our prime minister here did that, didn't he, Adam?
He said it was too dangerous. Too dangerous. And those who understand the dangers, typically healthcare workers, refuse when they feel they can. And I say to you, if they all did, nobody would need to get vaccinated. This is a crime against humanity. The United States government, by the way, has enacted federal legislation. And one of our trustees, Ralph Fusitola, is an attorney who is very, very knowledgeable in this area. The United States government has enacted federal legislation that says that it is a criminal act. It is forbidden to deny people access to rights, including public education, on the basis of not having submitted to coercion for medical procedures. You cannot legally be coerced. This is an illegal act. And this is part of the reason that I urge people to go to tinyurl.com, Mayday Marathon. I'm sorry, tinyurl.com/ Mayday Marathon, and download this tremendously important ebook free. There is no charge for it, and become part of the Natural Solutions Foundation information and action flow. If we just pass out information, we're going to be knowledgeable and dead, or knowledgeable and enslaved, and that's not good enough. There are actions, lawful, peaceful, legitimate, and sanctioned, well permitted actions that we can take that change public policy. At least we can take them now. If we don't take them now, we will pass a Rubicon and there will be no going back.
Oh, we've got to call them out as well, Dr. Rima. They're absolutely they're phonies and criminals as well. We have to call them out. Like Gar said, our Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, he did not vaccinate his own daughters, Alison, with the cervical cancer vaccine. He utterly refused. Tony Abbott, our Prime Minister, said, that is not going in my daughter's arms. And here he is, as I said to you before, through the papers, they're calling people terrorists. Here he is, our Prime Minister, introducing draconian vaccine laws onto the Australian public when his daughters probably weren't even vaccinated at all. So it's all right for them, but then we receive all the garbage, you know? And so these people need to be called out and exposed as well, Dr. Rima.
And by the way, Senator Dr. Richard Pan there is a recall movement afoot as well as a referendum. If you live in California, please go to Facebook referendum SB 277 to find out exactly how to put your name on the referendum petition to get SB 277 on the ballot so we can vote it down on November of 2016. If you know people who live in California, send them there. This is the people's recall, and it is of extreme importance that we do so. There should be no more stories like the story of Allison's son. No more. No more.
Yeah. Yes, we don't want to do it. And I just had the story here, Garth, as well, I've been putting up in New Zealand. They've got a new hardline vaccine laws, Alison, in regards to nurses. And nurses are being sacked and sent home if they don't receive the flu shots and these other vaccines. And so people have said they've seen nurses in tears as they go and get these four shots to keep their jobs. And you mentioned that before as well. So nurses are calling this intimidation and heavy-handed bullying in New Zealand as well. And the unions are up in arms about this, trying to stop it. But these are just new vaccine laws coming to New Zealand. So, you know, when you said that, you're not kidding. And that happened, you were talking about over 20 years ago. So it's getting really serious there now, and it will run in, Dr. Rima, to school teachers and people working with kids, all these types of things, and it will run on from there and become, Alison, absolutely compulsory to get them, and we don't want to go down that avenue. at all.
I think it's already progressed to that stage because
it's horrifying.
Employers themselves that wanted to try to represent themselves as following the best practice, allegedly health policy, etc., were trying to mandate internally as an employer to say, if you don't, and I'll give you a specific example, in Connecticut, there are hospitals that have said, if you don't get the flu vaccine, you will get a 5-day suspension and you will have to wear a mask continuously while you are at work in order to protect yourself and in order to protect our patients. And that was supposed to instill and flip the switch for the general population to say, see, that nurse is so conceited, that healthcare worker is so conceited and so selfish that they won't go out and they won't get vaccinated to protect you. When you come in here and you have hip replacement, they're not going to go get a vaccine and they could be carrying the influenza and they can bring it to you. And then you can get sick and you can die and it's going to be your healthcare worker's fault.
Yeah.
But when the employers couldn't get that done, when they couldn't do it on their own, their next step and public health's next step was to go to the state house, to the legislature, and actually get the legislature to enact that it's not just the employer who's going to suspend you or can you or whatever. Now it's the next step, which is in the state of Rhode Island, if you do not go and get this mandated vaccination as a healthcare worker, then you will no longer have a license to practice. So it's not that you can't work for that employer. It's not that you're going to get suspended.
Yeah.
Right. Now you cannot practice at all. Now you can no longer be an ER physician. You cannot be a nurse. You can't be a nurse's aide. You can't be a radiology tech. You can no longer work in that state in that profession.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's the steps that they're taking.
Disgusting.
At the same time, there is a counter trend. And that, indeed, Rhode Island is very interesting. In the news today, Representative Evans of Rhode Island, state representative, has asked the Department of Health to stop mandating the seventh grade HPV vaccine for children. He said you can't get cervical cancer in school. Therefore, the school has no business violating the rights of the parents. Now, it's only a small step, but it's part of the turning of the tide. And the turning of the tide comes when we push it back. Yes, the pharmaceutical industry and the government and the globalists are enormously well-funded, and they are enormously good at public relations, lies and deception, and mainstream media garbage, which is very, very well done, as I said earlier, but they are very weak. Why are they very weak? Because there are only a few of them, and there are a lot of us. And as long as we have the internet, I have no idea what happens if we lose the internet, which is why they want to take it away from us. But as long as we have the internet, we have the power because we can communicate with one another. And what we can communicate is truth. Once we have the ability to communicate, share, and act upon truth, you see, the Natural Solutions Foundation has action items that we flood decision makers with, and they get really scared. The decision makers don't read your email, but their assistants count the number that are for and the number that are against whatever it is that's under consideration. And if the tide is turning strongly, running strongly against, then they step back. Believe it or not, they step back every single time. It's when the tide is not running that they can do whatever they like. And we are the tide. We are the tide.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, we might pack it up for today, Alison and Dr. Rima, and it was great speaking with you. Is there anything you want to finish on there, Alison, with us today? Anything you want to get out there before we head out? How's your son going today, anyway?
Well, he's actually doing quite well.
Yeah.
They've never been able to medically explain why, after having diabetes for over 30 years, he hasn't had any major complications. He hasn't had any hospitalizations, all the things that are anticipated, expected, and that I was told to give, expect dire results at some point in time, because I've always felt not this day, not this week, there are things that I can do. And I've replaced, in my best research, aside from what standard medical answers are, to give him alternative supplements to, yeah, exactly as Dr. Rima said, to boost his immune system, to stabilize his blood sugar naturally. Yeah. He's got, he takes vitamin C, takes multiple vitamins. He takes supplements for cinnamon, chromium, magnesium, high doses of vitamin C, vitamin E, etc. I mean, I won't go into absolutely everything.
You take the powder, Allison? You take the powdered vitamin C?
He doesn't tolerate that as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He doesn't tolerate that as well with his stomach.
Sodium ascorbate works better.
Usually it can, but I also have to get things down because of his developmental disability. I can't explain to him, why or how to take something that tastes horrible or, things like that. So, but we do the best that we can, and everything comes down to the first step always being a natural remedy, everything being preventative and not reactive. So like just plain old, soap and water if you get a cut. Watching it, maintaining it, not using, triple antibiotic ointment and everything like that, and not using antibacterial soaps. So there's a whole big guise to it. But I think that there's a lot more, and I think what's really important for people to understand is that not just when you give what to some people tends to be like a standard rhetoric of, first they came for like the Jews, and I wasn't a Jew, so it didn't bother me. And then they came for the people that owned guns, but I didn't own a gun, so I didn't really care. But then they came for me. Okay. And I think that when you look in the general mentality, a lot of people are just that if they have not had a child or a family member that suffered adverse effects that were persistent, that were immediately recognizable to some degree. If they didn't see it, they haven't experienced it firsthand, then they don't necessarily listen, because they're like, well, that's not been my experience. My children have had their immunizations, or me and my brothers and sisters had their immunizations. We're fine. Okay. I think that those are the people that don't stop, that don't listen, and think that it's rhetoric. And there's a PR campaign for pro-vaccine that's being fueled that vilifies people who do not vaccinate, not just in the line of terrorists, but fear-mongering for the people who have conformed with the societal intentions. And to say, if they don't vaccinate their children, therefore, you're endangering my child. And that's what's vilifying the people that haven't had their children vaccinated or fully vaccinated or, whatever it is. The thing that I really don't understand is in the United States, we have HIPAA, Health Information Portability Act, by federal law, which came in, which says that no one is entitled to know or receive information or discuss information about my personal medical history with anyone else that's not directly involved in the care of me. And yet our children's records for immunizations and illnesses are now becoming part of a public record that is a direct violation of HIPAA. And I don't understand how this happens.
I would like to have an off-air conversation, Allison, between you and Ralph Fusatola, our foundation counsel, and me and General Burt, our president, about exactly this issue, because that is a legal conundrum that we need to address. And I like it very much because it offers the opportunity of a strong lawsuit that would have to be decided in favor of privacy. There is no other way. So this, I'm not a lawyer, but this is very, very interesting to me as a health freedom advocate. I love what you've just said. I really do. It's very important, and I'm glad. I had not thought about it in that way. So it's a new idea for me, and I think it has a lot of potential as a tool for us all. I'd like to, with your permission, Garth and Adam and Allison, I'd like to give our contact coordinates again, because it is so important for people to become part of a community of not just knowledge, but also of action, and of action that allows you to control the situation rather than be pushed around by it. So if I may, our principal website, which I don't think I've given before, is Dr. Rima Truth Reports, D-R-R-I-M-A, truthreports.com. And our vaccine truth ebook, 16 hours of podcast and references and videos beyond that 16 hours galore, is at tinyurl.com/Mayday Marathon. And the way in the United States to say no to forced vaccination is tinyurl.com/vaccination is violation. And the one more, if I may, the way to take action to protect informed consent and demand that the FDA follow U.S. and international law and protect informed consent is to go to tinyurl.com/informed consent petition, because the Natural Solutions Foundation has submitted a legal action against the FDA's policies, forcing the FDA to follow U.S. and international law promoting and protecting informed consent. And your comments are terribly important there, both in terms of what happens inside the FDA and what happens when we get to court with this. So that, once again, is tinyurl.com/informed consent petition.
Great start. Excellent. Nice. My goodness.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Rima, you're an amazing woman as usual. You give us so much time, and you know, you never ask for a thing. So it's absolutely amazing the amount of hours that you've poured through this information with us. We're so very grateful for that, and you and Ralph, what you're doing over there. It's so needed and so essential and amazing. So thanks very much for giving us some input today on this incredibly important topic here, Dr. Rima. We have to stop this carnage, you know. It's
yes,
it's just getting out of hand, and
thank
and
you
it,
so
it becomes
much
forced.
For,
we just can't,
thank
we can't
you so much
it.
For inviting for it's inviting always, me.
Of course,
it's a joy, and the work that you're doing is critically important, because without the dissemination, we could be knowledgeable and wise in a little cave while they slaughter us. But the dissemination is critical. Yeah, so thank you, Allison. Yes. Thank you for your bravery.
Thank you.
Thanks, Allison, for that.
Yes.
For talking to us today, with Garth and I and Dr. Rima. It's been great having you, and we hope that you can keep in touch with us in however you can. And maybe we can talk to you again later as we get new information in. It's very good, you know, Australia and America are quite aligned, and what happens there happens here, and what happens here happens there. We seem to be a bit of a test case, especially New Zealand. So to connect with Dr. Rima, Ralph, who's near New York, and you, who's in Connecticut, you guys get the news as it comes in, and we can discuss it and get it out on Twitter and Facebook, social media, our website. Dr. Rima shows her websites, and we get people on board and talking about it, and they start, especially Alison, a lot of people and mums who may have newborns and may be on the fence and not sure about what's going on or not trust vaccines. It's their right to be able to listen to us and you and Dr. Rima And it's their right as well to go to a doctor and talk to him about vaccines and go to an anti-vaccination clinic or go online and do their research. But at the end of the day, it's their decision, it's their life, it's their child, it's their beating heart, it's their body, it's their mind. And it doesn't belong to any government and it doesn't belong to any drug company. And so this is important that we keep discussing and talking and just chatting about this and getting the info out.
May I yes. say something really quickly to the new moms?
Absolutely.
Dads. New moms and dads. You're saying, yes, I've heard all this anti-vaccine stuff. I've heard all the dangers of vaccines. But what if I don't vaccinate? And what if something happens? To which my response is, and I'm speaking to your heart as well as your head, what if you vaccinate and something happens?
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
We just don't know. And are you prepared to go into that murky smoke and mirrors era? You know, I don't think you would be, because when it happens to your kid, you're not going to get any help off these people. And that's the way it is. And so, you know, you really need to think about this if you're a new mom out there, if you're new parents. You need to really go and do your research and really take this on board and deeply think about it. Okay, Dr. Yes. Rima, thanks very much. Thanks, Garth.
Thank you.
That's all right, mate.
Alison, thanks very much for talking Thank to you. Us today. It's great having you.
All the
you.
Best, Alison.
And good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Okay, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Great show today. Very important information. So please share around. Thanks to Alison. Thanks, Dr. Rima, Garth. Take care.